Welcome back inside the collective, everyone. It is the 2nd of December, a Tuesday, just after 8 o'clock Eastern, and good to be back with the guys. Jeff Zaribek, Cole Jackson, I'm Bobby Trossett. Great to be with you guys. As always, this episode is brought to you by our friends at Sleeper, and if you could, on the way in, do those things that help make this thing go. Like the video, subscribe, hit that notification bell. We'll get to as many super chats as possible, and as we take a look at setting the table and what we have in front of you tonight, we're going to take a hard look, a close look, and maybe even drop some harsh truths on the state of the Ravens offense entering week 14. It really starts and ends with Lamar Jackson, guys, who's in the middle of perhaps the most significant rut of his 8-year career. And so Cole will have a film perspective. Jeff, as always, will have his insider perspective, and I'll weave us in and out of topics all night long. It is Steelers week. The closing 5-week stretch has arrived. The soft schedule is in the rear view, and this will be the first of two, including the regular season finale, where these two storied rivals will meet up. We'll also take a look at overall a couple different things that dropped in the last few hours, including two players that returned to practice from a defensive standpoint. But first, why don't we begin, Jeff, with you right off the top here in terms of this is pretty unique. Not often is Lamar at the epicenter of some of the blame, or a great deal, perhaps, of the blame for why this Ravens offense is not firing on all cylinders at this point. And December has treated him really well over the years, and the calendar has flipped, so perhaps things will change. But your thoughts on where Lamar is right now going into kind of do-or-die mode over the next month?
Yeah, it's funny the perspective – it's funny how much one game changes perspective, because if we would have sat there when they were 1-5 and said they were going to go 5-1 the next six, everyone would have been okay. They would have signed up for that in blood. But you lose like that to a division rival, and your offense continues to play like they're playing, and it does. It creates, I don't want to say a hopelessness, but it certainly creates some angst about whether they're going to be able to turn this around, because they're not doing anything well. Let's face it. There have become games the defense has improved, but it's hard to find what this team can hang their hat on at this point of the season. And even if other areas improve, it's hard to imagine them making anything of the season and salvaging anything with how broken the offense looks. And you can't talk about that without talking about Lamar. And, I asked him particularly whether this is his toughest stretch. He immediately said no. And I forgot what exact year it was. There was a stretch where he threw a ton of interceptions in like a 3 or 4 game span. I think it included that Pittsburgh game where he threw a cup, maybe 3 or something. But I don't remember him struggling like this in every area than he is now. And, I'm talking, obviously, the running thing's not working for him. He's averaging, 3 yards a carry in 5 games since he's been back. He hasn't rushed for 20. He doesn't have a 20-yard run all season, which is unheard of for him. He used to have a couple of those a half, it almost seemed like. And the accuracy, I saw a stat the other day that he has the second most off-target throws in football. He's missing guys, he's missing open throws, and it just, Lamar will never admit he's fighting confidence, and obviously injuries are impacting him, and kudos to him for not blaming it, but they cannot win with him playing this way. And we could beat around the bush all we want. We know the offensive line isn't very good. We've talked about that all every week. We know that Eric DaCosta didn't do enough to upgrade that group. We also know that Todd Monken really hasn't had a good year. I mean, as the kids say, he hasn't been in his bag too often this year. And, that starts with John Harbaugh, too. This is his team, and he hasn't done anything to turn this thing around. But when you're not hitting layups, when you're struggling with the most basic things, spiking swing passes into the ground, missing simple outs on third down, missing a read where if he just handed it off to Derrick Henry, he would have waltzed into the end zone right up the middle. Instead, he took it and only gained a yard or two around the end. Missing open receivers, not seeing the field. Lamar has set a really high bar, and he deserves all the praise he's gotten. And, you know, I said it last week, for several years, he's masked this team's weaknesses. He's protected other areas of the team. He's made probably coaches and players on his team look better than they should, but he's just not doing that. And he hasn't played really well in a while. He's had some good moments. He had a good second half in Miami, but any improvement of this team and any chance this team has of making a run needs to have number eight play even close to the level he's capable of playing, because I could go back and look at that old tape from that other stretch, but I don't remember him struggling this much with in pretty much every area.
Yeah, I think we'd have to go back to 2021. He had that game, that OT game against Indy, where it was like 442 yards, four touchdowns, they win. And then if you look at the stretch after that, it's got to be right up there with this one, you know. Losses to Cincinnati, where he got sacked five times. They had the Miami Thursday night fiasco. Going to Cleveland the next week, throw four picks. Going to Pittsburgh the week after that, throw get sacked seven times. You know, that's where you're kind of stacking games that would be comparable to the stretch we've seen over the last 3 weeks. And if you go to the film, I mean, I did a film review this morning, and it was weird. Like I've been lucky enough to be covering the film, like I've gone wire to wire the last 3 years, and I've gotten to cover two MVP campaigns from Lamar Jackson. Like it's every week, it's like, wow, how can he dazzle me now? And then it's when you get into this, we haven't seen anything since 2021. And, you know, I will say 2021 comparable issues with the offensive line. And, you know, I've covered that. We've talked about it. I get really frustrated with that because, you know, everyone's always like, no one's talking about the offensive line. We talk about it every week. It's covered on my channel every week. It's covered on every channel every week. You know, at some point there needs to be, and like, if you go to some of the issues, so what did I see on film? Like one of the fundamental issues was Lamar in the last 3 weeks, he's not doing what he normally does pre-snap to get ready on any given play. And those really stood out in the cover zero looks. We saw that in 2021 in that Miami game where they just simply weren't ready. They didn't have a plan when they, you know, set seven up on the line, bail out two, rush five, bail out three, rush four. And those same pieces haunted us on Thursday night. You know, there was the play where, you know, right towards the end of the half, the one thing Lamar couldn't do on third down was get sacked because they were right in field goal range. Zay Flowers runs a spot route, just like a little slant with a curl. It's wide open. The blitz is coming off his left side. Ronnie takes the inside man. There's your free rusher. The quarterback's responsible for that. That's not on the offensive line. Like, if you look at the pre-snap alignment, they have a five-man line, no tight end. They're stacking with six. Whatever side your center is sliding to, you have to be responsible for that backside. Like, this isn't complicated stuff, and this isn't stuff that's new to Lamar. Lamar had solved this blitz. You know, Jeff had it in his article a couple weeks ago. Lamar has been one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL consistently over the last 3 years against the blitz. So the question becomes why? Like that, and you know, we don't really have the answers to that. I don't know what's going on mentally. I don't know if it's the injury stacking, if it's his confidence. I'm sure it's a whole, you know, combustion of all these factors working together with one. I do think that in the past, it's just been in smaller segments. We've seen Lamar start to not trust his offensive line. He starts to press, and that's when issues cascade. And that's why I focus so much at the start of the year on that Cleveland Brown game where he got pressured on 62% of his dropbacks. And then you started to see issues stack and stack and stack. And against Detroit, you know, this team couldn't deal with a four-man rush with a spy, like little basic things. But the other issue that I saw in film is I've never seen Lamar struggle with coverages like he did in the last game. And again, I'm not going to say this is where, again, I get really frustrated because it's like, I'll say that and people will say, how can you say Lamar doesn't know how to read? Like, of course I'm not saying that. I know he knows how to do it. He's a two-time MVP, for Christ's sakes. But right now, he's struggling to read coverages. We heard him specifically say on that Zay Flowers, the fumble where he, you know, tried to check the pass. He said, I was looking for the Tampa 2 mic. They were in cover six. Zay Flowers, the biggest open spot in cover six is going to be the middle of the field, which is exactly where Zay Flowers broke. Zay Flowers didn't have any defender within 7 yards of him. Wide open. Lamar looked right at him. That's where he was targeting. And Lamar thought that linebacker was there. Like, it, for whatever reason, wherever he read after the snap, I can't tell where he's looking, but whatever he saw, he thought that guy was there. So he didn't account for him. He doesn't make those types of mistakes. Those are stuff that he struggled with in 2018, but we don't see it anymore. But he's struggling with it right now, and he just struggled with it last week. So, again, why is it happening? I'm not sure. Again, I think it's I think it's all related to a combination of confidence being impacted, him not trusting his offensive line. Because that was the funny thing about that play. I don't think he's had a better pocket on a drop back that lasted 3-4 seconds than that play. You know, it actually set up like a perfect little pocket, and we just haven't seen that. But again, it hasn't been like that consistently all year. So there's going to be some blame to the offensive line, but your quarterback can't fumble the ball into the ground. And especially like in that scenario, the difference there was Zay Flowers catching that, having 5-10 yards of yak, and then they're sitting in almost in field goal range. You could be looking at 10-9 going into half rather than 12-7, right? Like, little minor things like that are making a huge impact. So until they're able to, you know, figure out whatever he's going through. And I think a 10 day, you know, mini bye week couldn't have come at a better time to be able to sort some of this stuff out. I do think number one, and I understand he's hurt, but I think he's got to be out there at practice tomorrow. I'm sure the lack of reps on Wednesdays hasn't been great. I know they're trying to do what they can, to manage his injury and, you know, kind of find that middle ground. But the lack of repetitions clearly making some sort of impact, because we haven't seen him miss passes like he has. You know, that Zay Flowers out route, just he threw it too high. Zay Flowers had 5 yards of separation. There was another play, Mark Andrews broke an out route. The DB, it was Geno Stone. He slipped when Mark yeah. broke. If Mark catches that in stride, he's going for 15, 20 yards of yak. Yeah. So it's just, and these aren't complicated things. It's, you know, a 10-yard out, you know, I'm not going to say I could throw. I probably miss. Let's be real. But, you know, a high school level quarterback could probably hit that. So, I find it very frustrating. Ravens fans have dealt with a narrative of whether or not their quarterback is a quarterback. So I understand everybody gets very defensive when it comes to Lamar Jackson, but there's a ton to criticize here. And I do think a lot of it is valid. And I think if your response to everything is just to blame everyone else, you know, the play calling, the, you know, I didn't see any issues in the play calling on Thursday. You know, you could look at the second quarter running back reps, maybe. Like, I'm not that sold on it, because where they had success in this game was using the pass to set up the run. That, and I tweeted it like 13 times throughout the night. So I wasn't like overly upset about that, especially when, you know, we're having the turnovers that we're having. So anyway, all that to say, I think there's a ton to criticize here. I think a lot of it's valid. And I really hope people can take a step back, be a little bit more objective, and stop just going straight to being defensive. Like, again, we're trying to figure out some of the problems here. We're trying to have an honest conversation. It doesn't need to be, you know, pitchforks and brimstone every time we criticize our quarterback. It's okay to have a bad stretch. Just got to get it fixed.
I think we can all agree too that like Lamar's Thanksgiving night looks a lot different, right? Should Isaiah hold on to that football? Should that phantom OPI on Zay not be called? Should Devontae's come down with one or of those two?
The
right?
Crazy thing about that Devontae's Walker, the first one, he broke a route on Geno Stone again. Geno Stone fell over like 3 times in this game. He broke a route over Geno. Geno started to stumble. He stumbled right in front of Walker, and that's why he lost the ball in the air. It was actually a dime by Lamar.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It is true. It's like you look at that. What if they just connect on two of those touchdowns? How different is this game? How right. different is the stat line?
And the end of that sentence was, I think we can all agree that the night itself looks different, right? Yeah. Numbers wise, eye test. Yeah. But as Cole just laid out eloquently, there's a lot more to uncover when it comes to these uncharacteristic layups being missed. the continued red zone struggles, the lack of polish, the operation. Jeff, you mentioned that. Was that spike to that was Keaton, right?
Keaton Mitchell, yeah. He was open for a swing pass. Probably wouldn't have been a big play, but, you know, you don't know. You get the guy ball and the ball in open field. You just never know what could happen. Sure. Cole brought up the one to Andrews. Now, Andrews had to kind of slide to try to catch it. It hit his hand, so maybe you say he should have caught it. But even if he caught it, you'd have left a lot of yards on the field because you made him lunge for it. Yeah. The out to Flowers, like, look, I think I wrote a story about the offense today, and Lamar was a big focus of it. And as usual, whenever you mention Lamar Jackson struggling – you hear from, what are they called, stands? Is it the Lamar stands? How does that go? You guys are younger than me. You should know that hip stuff and the social media jargon. But you hear from, you know, Lamar's people who believe he doesn't do anything wrong. And you say, well, why is he the focus? What about, you know, well, look, the offensive line isn't changing. Marshall Yanda ain't walking through that door.
This could. we could write him a really strongly worded letter.
And Todd Monken
could be a slot receiver.
Yeah, Todd Monken is who he is at this point. Like, their team is out there. This is their team. What the difference is the quarterback. Like, their hopes of fixing this and turning it around rests on, yes, everybody can do things a little better, let's be honest. But there's going to be no drastic overhaul in everyone else. How this team is going to make the playoffs is the only way they're going to win the division, make the playoffs, or make any noise in January, if the quarterback starts playing like an MVP. And yes, that's a lot. Or even at an above average level. And yes, that's a lot to put on Lamar, but this team was built around Lamar Jackson's skill set. He's the face of the franchise. And it's tough to win if your quarterback isn't playing at a high level, and he's struggling right now, and he's human. Like, that doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean it impacts how you feel about him in the future. But as Cole said, like, this is what we're watching. And I think since he's been back, what would you have they played more than like two good halves? Like, I'll say, like, people talk about the Miami game. It really was the Miami second half, because one of those touchdowns, they got set up at the 3-yard line by the Loey Gilman play, and they needed four downs to get it in. They were sloppy in the first half in Miami, didn't play that well. They did not play well in the first half in Minnesota. Now, again, you could come up with excuses, or you could come up with explanations for all those. Minnesota's a really good attacking defense, okay? They were getting the ball out quickly. Lamar managed that game really well. Kudos to him. Miami game, Lamar was rusty. He had been out for 4 weeks, including three games. It was always going to take a little while to warm to the task. The Browns are really good defensively. Okay. But when you start struggling like they did against the Jets, there's no rational explanation for that.
And especially then last week. I mean, the Bengals are historically bad on defense.
Yeah. And it's just, that's why the focus is on Lamar for people asking. Because first of all, we've all talked about the offensive line every week. So to say, well, nobody's talking, is a joke. Todd Monken, there's been anonymous stories written about him. His job performance has been a hot topic much of the season. He's been talked about plenty too. The turnover issue, it's been talked about. I think that was the biggest topic of conversation around the team. So to suggest all those things are getting ignored, they're not. This team has other problems. They sure do. But this team has a 2-time most valuable player at quarterback, and he's in the midst of one of his worst stretches of his career, if not the worst. So that's obviously going to be a heavy topic of conversation, particularly as you go into two divisional games that they absolutely have to win. I thought if they went 2-1 during the stretch with two against the Bengals and one against Pittsburgh, 2-1 would have put them in good position to do what they need to do and win this division. But now they got to win two straight against those two teams. And now they're coming off a performance that has to leave you scratching your head about their viability as playoff contenders.
And you take that wild card domination where they ran all over Pittsburgh out of the equation historically. And I know Lamar hasn't been available for all the Steelers games throughout his career, but historically we all know that Pittsburgh has played him very.
Oh yeah. They've had his number big time.
Yeah.
Well, they also, you know, we see what they do well. They get after the quarterback, and, you know, and again, I know there's some people probably celebrating all the negativity about the Steelers and all the talk about Mike Tomlin, and this is when they do their best work. I think that has to be scary for them. How many times have we seen the weak conversation, and I'm not even saying ahead of a Ravens matchup, just in general, the weak conversation being about, has Mike Tomlin lost his edge? Is it time? Like, what's wrong with TJ Watt? Where's their defense? And then get off the mat and play a dominant game. I mean, you know that, but hey, there's really no excuses this week. There isn't. This is a game they need to win. And if they're worth, if this team season's going to amount to anything, they have to win. It's, I don't want to say it's their last stand because they have four tough games after it, but we're getting to that point, fellas.
Yep. And that's a perfect segue. We're going to look ahead to week 14 here in just a second. But first, a message from this episode's sponsor.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Continued thanks to Sleeper for all the support they've been giving us as our exclusive sponsor throughout the season. Again, that's promo code HMA. It's going to get you up to a $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions do apply. You can see Sleeper's terms of use for details. It's currently operational in over 25 states and counting. You can check out more at Sleeper today. We appreciate them. So, all right, Cole, we all watched, some of us did, on Sunday what Buffalo did to Pittsburgh. Bills were down both of their starting tackles, and they were still able 249 rushing yards. That's what they posted on a Pittsburgh defense that, whether it was in the media, whether it was online, was just tumultuous to say the very least. There's been a flurry of moves, by the way, from a Pittsburgh perspective. They will not have Derek Harmon, their talented rookie. So he's out of the equation come Sunday. They released Darius Slay, veteran DB, and they just signed Adam Thielen, who was released just a couple days ago by, or within the last 24 hours, perhaps, by the Minnesota Vikings. So as you take an early look on Tuesday, Ravens are 6-point favorites, by the way. Not sure that really matters, but we'll throw that out there. Going into the first of two within a 5-week span, the regular season finale will be in Pittsburgh. Something's got to give here, right? Steelers aren't going to allow themselves to get rushed on again like that back-to-back weeks, right?
You wouldn't think so, but I mean, it's one of those, like, when you're running the, and we've seen this for years with the Baltimore Ravens, it's been one of the best thing about covering the offensive line of the Baltimore Ravens for the last 5 years is, when you can inflict your will on a defense, there's quite literally nothing they can do. And that's the difference between the Bills and the Ravens offensive lines in the current states is Josh Allen in that game was 15 for 23, a touchdown and an interception. I'm not going to say I could have done it, but you know, they were not in a position where they had to hang their hat on their MVP quarterback to get the job done. They went out with a game plan to run the football in an area they thought they could. And when the Steelers couldn't stop it, they just kept doing it. It was reminded me of, you know, those Greg Roman Ravens teams where they couldn't stop the Ravens rushing attack. And they just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. You know, and it all came off inside zone runs. It wasn't a complicated run scheme. James Cook had a phenomenal game. You know, some of his one cut ability and what he can do in space. Like, there's no denying that, but I mean, Ray Davis stepped in and had 62 yards on 9 carries. Like, you know, they were able to run the ball with whoever, whenever, wherever. And that to me really shows the difference between the two teams in their current states is, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, like your offensive line needs to be able to be a backbone of your team. If you're struggling, you need to be able to hang your hat on your O-line. It's the foundation of an offensive unit. And it's that way for a reason. And I think that's one of the fundamental flaws of how the Ravens are currently built is they're not built to do that right now. They can't, you know, when shit gets tough, they can't say, all right, let's go out, run inside and get Derrick Henry. Like, we have Derrick Henry, for Christ's sakes. And we still can't go out and run the ball whenever we want, wherever we want, like we used to. And a lot of that falls on the offensive line. And so, you know, we saw a nice little flash from Emory Jones. I think that's exciting. I hope to see more of him. I think you also saw some rookie mistakes, which is completely expected. You know, it's when Roger Rosengarten first got into games over Patrick McCary, there was a 5-week stretch where he struggled, and then you saw him kind of buff out a little bit. And, you know, I still think he's playing the wrong guard spot, but, you know, classic Cole to make that comment. I think that's one of the fundamental issues. And I know someone just mentioned they did that without their top two tackles. They ran inside, they ran off their guards all day. And that's the difference between having a very competent set of guards and a bottom five, I think is a fair call, bottom five pair of guards in Andrew Voorhees and Daniel Falele. So, I mean, I'd like to see them come out with a commitment to run the football, but you know, you can say that and it sounds cute. And I mean, it's a nice key to the game, but if those guys can't go out and execute and move Cam Hayward and, you know, get into the second level, and that's really what they've been struggling with. You know, the Bengals did a really good job of run fitting in that game. And that's really where they were able to, have some, again, hits on Derrick Henry in the backfield. And that's been the story of the season, is how many times he's taken contact before the line of scrimmage. It's not something that we saw last year. So we have seen that major regression. So the key to the game here is to create an environment where you don't have to rely on Lamar Jackson to be Superman. I think that's fair to say. I mean, like, if he's struggling mentally, if he's struggling to process, create that environment to make the game simple for him. You know, come out under center, run the football, create play action opportunities, the way you can run crossing routes with your tight ends, get them out in space, get Zay Flowers out in space, create those easier opportunities to settle Lamar Jackson into the game would be a phenomenal first quarter approach. So that's really what I'm looking at. But again, you have to be able to hang your hat on the offensive line to be your, to basically be the Superman. You know, it's one of those things where I have to ask them, you know, you're going to go out there and you're going to move bodies for four quarters. And thus far through 13 games, the Baltimore Ravens have not been able to do that.
Yeah. I think, I forgot who said this. Might've been Robert Mays from The Athletic, or it might've been Warren Sharp, but the Steelers really aren't hard to figure out. When those pass rushers are getting to the quarterback, taking the ball away, or when Jalen Ramsey or Patrick Queen are taking the ball away, they win football games. But when they don't, when they're forced to kind of play one of those games where, you know, another team is holding on to the ball and being able to run it and kind of, you know, doing that, they haven't been able to win. So can you control the tackles, and can the tackles hold their ground enough and control those guys from making game-changing plays? And, you know, to me, you watch the Steelers, and this was evident in the last two matchups with the Ravens last year, including the playoff one. It just feels like their defense is never on the same page. Like, you know, fingers being pointed, people asking questions. Like, it just feels like, you know, like that backside run. I mean, TJ Watt said after the game, I've never been a part of, you know, a game like that where people ran the same play over and over again. And, but the Ravens typically bring out the best in them. That's always been a tough matchup for the Ravens for obvious reasons. You'd like to think that they'll be able to get their running game going. They need to play with a lead, you know, enough with the chase in the game and then all this, you know, like, play with an early lead, get an early stop or score an early drive and build onto that lead. Let the quarterback settle in a little and relax. And, you know, again, I said it earlier, if this Ravens team is who they thought they were, they'll find a way to win this game, get something going. If they don't respond offensively, they're never going to respond. I mean, if after the long break, after hearing all the criticism, Lamar's taking shots from national media or from media in Pittsburgh, if they're not inspired and dialed in every detail and ready to play Sunday, there's no hope for this team right now. There's no hope for this offense. I mean, again, I go back to the last stand feel. This needs to be a spot where they decide, we're going to control this game offensively. We're not going to coast into a win. We're not going to depend on defense. This is going to be us from the outset. We're going to set the tone. And are they capable of doing that? That's the big question. We just haven't seen a Ravens win like that. I'll say Last time I think they played a pretty complete offensive game was against the Chicago Bears, and the quarterback that day was Tyler Huntley. And you look back at that game, and yeah, they were a little slow starting, but that's because the Bears had the ball like the entire first quarter. They had two long drives to kick it off. So you can't, you know, the Ravens had 1-3 and out, and that was really their only chance on the field early in that game. But once the second quarter got in, they were rolling and they got going. And that's the last time I felt like they played a pretty complete offensive game, and complete offensive game with Lamar. Have we seen that since week one? And again, I'm not saying this is Lamar's fault. I'm just saying it's just a referendum of where they're at offensively. Like, you know, they've had moments where they've looked really good. And but if they're going to be legit this year, if they're going to make a run, and, it seems to be outsiders still think this is a dangerous team and still think they're going to flip a switch. And, you know, I say all the time, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, but I'm not seeing it. I haven't seen it. And at some point, if this is who you are, you got to play like it. And, you know, there's just not a whole lot of mounting evidence that this group has improved offensively. And we'll see Sunday if they're able to answer the bell. It couldn't be any more obvious what they need to do.
And there's a stunning amount of parallels between this 2021 team and the current team. Like, when you look at it, you know, they had that stretch down. They kind of reversed the stretches where we started 1-5. And I think the Ravens lost. They were 8-3 and finished 8-9, so they lost 6 down the stretch when Lamar got hurt against Cleveland. But you know, the other big piece, and we haven't really touched on it, is the lack of ability to get to the quarterback. And You saw the Bengals solve that. And I'm just looking at that 2021, the stat sheet. Tyus Bowser led the team 17 games, 7 sacks. Odafe Owe, 5 sacks. Justin Houston, 4.5, and then Patrick Queen with 2. So they had 3 guys with more than 2 sacks.
And Odafe was a rookie.
Yeah, and like, you know, a young Nnamdi Matabike only had 2, and I forgot about Justin Houston. Wow. It's been staggering, their inability to get to the quarterback. And, you know, we saw some nice flashes. You saw a guy like Draymond Jones come in and make a big impact. Mike Green had a couple flashy moments. But you saw that when you're going to rely on sim pressures to get to the quarterback, they can just solve that by getting the ball out. And it really was a tale of two halves with this defense. You know, they were phenomenal in the first half, you know, especially with some of the field position, like getting, you know, Bengals starting first and goal on the 3 after the fumble, and, you know, going, you know, 4 out there. And, you know, Kyle Hamilton making the 4th down play on the pass to Gesicki. So, you know, that they stepped up there, but you saw that intentional approach that the Bengals had, that, you know, they're going to manufacture pressure. Doing that's going to take a little bit of time because they're running stunts. They're running, you know, where Kyle Hamilton will crash and then, you know, Roquan will loop. And, you know, it takes a few seconds to get to the quarterback. So they just decided we're going to get the ball out quick. And that's all they did most of the game. And in the first half, the defense, you know, the defensive backs made plays. And in the second half, they made less plays. And I still think the defense played really good given the circumstances, the amount of short fields they had to face, the amount of plays, you know, the Bengals offense was on the field for 80 plays. The Ravens were only 57. So, you know, time of possession, the amount of plays, all of that, you know, stacking up. So, you know, 26 points in those circumstances really isn't that bad, in my opinion. But at the end of the day, they still don't have that dude out there. And it kind of goes back into the fundamental build of this team. They're weak in the trenches. And a lot of that's impacted by Nnamdi Matabike, no doubt about it. Him being here would be a huge, huge add. But, you know, there's still fundamental concerns with how this team is currently built. And it's, again, when you look at what can we hang our hat on when the postseason comes, the one spot to be strong, to have a postseason run, is to be strong in the trenches. And, you know, they're not strong on either side of the ball. And that's one of the fundamental concerns. And it concerns me going against the Steelers, because I don't even know who's supposed to play quarterback this week. And, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, Aaron Rodgers isn't the Aaron Rodgers of old, but, you know, they'll find a way to have some sloppy plays and move the ball. They'll score some points. So it's really going to be on the offense to go out there and win this game. But as we've discussed, you know, the Steelers defense have had this offense's number for years outside of that wild card blowout. Now, they did play them a lot better last year than in previous years, but that was the narrative going into last year, was that they just couldn't solve the Steelers' defense. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do this week, but I think being soft in the trenches is a huge issue on both sides of the ball.
So, yeah, Steelers have been on the field for more plays defensively than any team in football. They've struggled all year to get off the field. So they're coming off a game where that was a physical game where they're battered physically. A couple guys went down. They're on the field a ton in that game. It felt like the entire second half they're on the field. You know, that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. The Ravens need to start fast offensively, put together one of these drives, get Steelers thinking, here we go again, and just really take control of the game. What you have to do is avoid the foolish turnovers, holding on to the ball, not tucking the ball away, and just some of the mistakes that have come to define some of the
Ravens' struggles against the Steelers.
Yeah, the drops. Yeah, some of the mistakes that come to define them when they play the Steelers.
Under center, zone runs, play action, make it simple.
Speaking of under center, the opposing quarterback can't even take snaps under center because of his left hand or wrist or that small fracture, whatever they're categorizing that as. By the way, Aaron Rodgers turned 42 today. And so,
Happy birthday. Can't wait to sack your ass on the weekend.
42. We know he is not particularly mobile, really never has been. And at this point in his career, is very unwilling to run. He's bruised and broken, quite literally. He looked like, who is it, Harry from Home Alone? Is that what everybody was having fun with?
That was an elite gif. I was dying.
Oh, that was hilarious. But
I need Mike Green to be McAllister this weekend.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Kevin McAllister, baby. Kevin, you know, it's that time of year. But how about this statistic here from Ben Fennell, just to kind of give you an idea of how one-dimensional and how really inept the Steelers have been from a downfield passing attack. They have not completed a downfield pass, which is measured at 20 or more air yards, in 36 days. On those quarterbacks, so Aaron and Rudolph, 0-for-13, 3 interceptions over the last 5 games. So again, who knows how things, something's got to give, right? When it comes to their ability to stop the run, it's Ravens Steelers. You throw a lot of these trends, these statistics, the win-loss record out the window. But Jeff, they've been very one-dimensional as an offense.
Yeah, they have. And, you know, it's amazing the talk coming out of there. It feels like what we're dealing with. It's fire everybody. It's the longtime veteran coach is done. It's the GM hasn't done a good enough job building that team. You got the Broderick Jones injury was kind of a big deal for them, and he's got a neck injury, which sounds pretty familiar with what the Ravens are dealing with in a couple areas. And they're just so up and down. They've gotten old in a lot of areas, and you subtract Darius Slay and then you add Adam Thielen, so you're not exactly lowering the age of the team too much. But I'm sure Thielen and Rodgers probably know each other well from their time in the same division. You know, this goes back to something Cole said last week. He focused it on the offensive line, but I think you could say it in general. I mean, you know, the concern a little bit about this Ravens team is just, I don't think there's enough evidence that they've played to the level of physicality that past Ravens teams, the great Ravens teams, played with. And I'm not calling anybody soft. I'm just saying, like,
I am. They're soft.
where is the impose the will games? Where's the games where they just came out, punched somebody in the mouth, jumped on them, and just bullied them? I mean, look, I saw those games all day Sunday. I saw that happen. I saw the Bills do it to the Steelers. I watched the Patriots do it to the Giants last night. You know, like, where did that team go? Why can't they do that anymore? Like, that's, you know, I think that's going to be one of the stories of the season. Like, did they play with the level of kind of, you know, physicality that we've seen past Ravens teams play with? You know, and I think you can say as of now, they haven't. They haven't played at that level, and it's really shown. And Sunday would be a good time to start it. I know, like, I've already read some of the stories in Pittsburgh. Oh, their running game. We struggle against their running game, but this is not the Ravens running game. Like, they're not dominating games with the running anymore. And it gets back to some of the criticism of Todd Monken. I could see them running the ball a few more times, Thursday. There were a couple opportunities. But, man, I mean, like the second quarter, you look at those drives, and the first drive, they're inside their own 15. They run the ball and get 0 yards. And then the next drive, they start at the 2. They run the ball and get 0 yards. That's so it. You want to run the ball more. You need to run the ball more. But you want to be able to control the game a little bit with your running game. Start picking up some yards on first down when you're running it and start completing some of the gimme or the passes and setting up second and mid and third and shorts and second and shorts. They're just they're having trouble getting into those manageable situations where they could really control a game, the run game. And part of that is because their run game isn't picking up 4 and 5 yards enough. There's way too many losses, 0 yard gains, 2 yard gains. They're just, you know, so it all works together. But the reality of it is they haven't been able to do anything consistently well on that side of the ball, at all. And, we'll see what Sunday brings. But it's a scary spot, obviously, anytime, shit kind of happens when they play the Steelers. So they can't afford for that to happen on Sunday. They need to take care of business.
And when you're backed up on your goal line, you need to run the ball. You don't want to be back in there because of, the safety factor. And this is kind of my point, and where, like, they've lost their identity as a running football team. They've talked about being a bully and all this bully talk. And then we've talked about it. They've moneyballed the guard position. And I don't think they put the resources in place in the trenches, specifically the offensive line, to be the bully that they speak to what they want to be. That's kind of my takeaway of it, because again, for years under Greg Roman, and I'm not trying to say bring back Greg Roman, but everyone knew the Ravens were running it. They knew when they were running it. They knew they were going to run it, but you couldn't fucking stop them. And so the question is why? And it comes down to player execution. It's one of those things. Anybody that's played in the trenches, you can go out there and, I've seen guys do this before where they get down in their three-point stance and tell the guy across, say, we're running the football right now. And it didn't fucking matter because they just run right through your face. The Baltimore Ravens cannot do that right now. They don't move bodies off the line of scrimmage. There's no stat out there, but they have to lead the league in stalwarted, run block reps. I think actually the Raiders might be the worst offensive line I've ever seen put together, like statistically. But we're not too far behind from a run blocking perspective. Like the amount of times that Derek's getting hit in the backfield, it's absurd. And, it's been hidden a little bit because of the explosive rushes that they, like, look at last week. He buried that, 28-yard touchdown run. You take away that, and he had, only, I think, 28 yards the rest of the game. It's just they're not able to move the football. And again, in some of those downs, yeah, it's obvious run downs, but that comes down to executing, moving guys. And they talk about – John talked about it on Monday. We're a running football team. We're going to run the football. We're going to stop the run. You got to have the offensive line to do that. There's nothing more – in need of execution. Your quarterback can't even really help you right now in the run game. It's your offensive line has to go out there and move bodies.
I want to say two things real quick, guys. One, the silver lining, and that was hard to find, but the silver lining, I think, Thursday was I thought Lamar looked healthier. Was he peak explosive Lamar? No, but I thought he was moving around better. I thought there was instances in that game where you said, okay, there was the one completion where he bought a bunch of time. And I think it was
Likely.
But even I think later one of the games where Likely did hold on to the ball, I think Stone tackled him from behind and tried to go after the ball again. But, Lamar bought a bunch of time. And delivered. I thought he looked better. Now you're going to get some time where he has some extended time off. So that's one thing. But two, like going back to the run game, they spend all halftime saying, okay, we need to run the ball more. The defense was on the field. Let's run the ball. They come out and go 3 and out with 3 runs. Now, the third was a scramble from Lamar. So that wasn't a design run, but Henry, and then Lamar run and punt. So, yes, they do need to run the ball. They need to run the ball better. And, that's going to be on the coaches a little bit to scheme it better. And, obviously, as Cole's made clear over and over again, like, you know, you got to get some traction. You got to move some bodies. And until you do, they're not going to be able to run the ball successfully.
Let's get to some super chats, guys. Colin Donahue says, whoever loses Ravens Steelers will miss the playoffs. The best pathway for the Ravens is obviously to win the AFC North. That's the best, most probable way for them to punch their ticket. Dream says, Cole, why don't you take this one from Dreams?
Lamar masking this team's weaknesses should not be the formula every year. EDC has to focus on need and John has to coach better. This isn't fair to eight. You know, I kind of talked about it a little bit on this specific piece. You know, I do think there's that aspect of not being able to lean into their offensive line to get them out of tight spots. But, you know, eight has to step up and do his part too. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where the Ravens are currently at, it's a little bit of both, but I definitely agree that the offensive line was not built in a way that was going to be something they could hang their hat on if things weren't going right from their quarterback.
I want to push back on that a little. Every star quarterback masks their team's weaknesses. That's what star quarterbacks do. That's why you're getting paid $50 million. You can't pay everybody. This is a salary cap year. Are we saying the Chiefs haven't had weaknesses during the Pat Mahomes era? Every time we see that team, he's masking weaknesses and finding a way until finally this year, it appears he's struggling to do that. You know, Josh Allen, his weapons in the past, are we saying Josh Allen hasn't masked Bill's weaknesses? Like, I agree. It's not fair to put it all on Lamar. There's fundamental problems with not improving the offensive line enough, not playing well enough, this losing their identity. But every star quarterback masks his team's weaknesses. There's no perfect roster. You need your star quarterback, your face of the franchise, to play like a star if you're going to have the Super Bowl season. And so I agree in a sense to that question, but that is the life of a franchise quarterback who's making $50 million a year. They're expected to mask some of the team's weaknesses.
Appreciate you, Dreams. Ravens Flock 5752 says, hashtag resign Cheeto. Thanks for all your effort, team. Colin's back with another one. Jeff, why don't you get this one?
Out of all the games that we don't need a turnover, this is the one. The Steelers kill us with turnovers. Absolutely right. That's the way they win. It seems like every game they win.
Black magic.
And it's often it's a Highsmith strip or a Watt strip, but they always mix in one of these botched punts. And you see Danny Smith on the sideline with the
Remember that fucking interception they had by the linebacker last year or two years ago?
Where he pulled it out of Justice Hill's hands.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean. Insane.
Peyton Wilson.
Yeah.
That was absurd.
Peyton Wilson, yeah. So, yeah, no, you got to play a clean football game. That's what, you know, I don't know that you have to do anything spectacular offensively to beat this team, but you can't let them into the game with turnovers. They prey on that. And I mean, most good defenses do. They've not been a good defense all the time, but they look a lot better than they are when they're taking the ball away.
Nicole, what was that game within the last couple of years? They had like six drops.
Seven. It was Canadian Thanksgiving. I remember I was sitting at my mother-in-law's house and just was doing that thing where you sit in the corner and you're just getting more and more anxious as dinner's coming. And then I just ruined dinner for everybody involved. So.
Well, remember last year in Pittsburgh, second play, Henry coughed it up. Like, didn't Deshaun Elliott strip Derrick Henry and then likely turn the ball over in the second quarter? And yeah, that's been the story when they lose the Steelers.
Another one from Dreams. He says D-Hen would break the record in a G-Row-led offense.
That is true. You know, you take Gus Edwards and you just give – he's just Gus Edwards on steroids. It's not literally on steroids, but
– Row Live 95 with some Canadian currency. You know where that's got to go to. Why don't you take it there?
Right in his pocket, too.
When you can only successfully run on toss plays, that says a lot. We don't have real guys. These boys don't lift. I mean, it is true. And you've seen it actually in the play calling. I covered it was it the Browns game? Yeah, I think it was the Browns game. They went to a trap-based run game, and the whole point of that was because they don't trust them to win one-on-one blocks. So we're going to use the quote-unquote, I wouldn't say it's not a trick play in the traditional sense, but they're going to try and use a number of pullers and misdirections to move the football on the ground. That to me says a lot about what Todd Monken thinks of their offense of line.
Jeff, can we get an update on the other side of the ball? A couple guys returned to practice courtesy of the team website. Ardarius Washington back in, what, May? Tore his Achilles in a conditioning session. Then Tavius Robinson, we know, went down with a foot within the last 2 months or so. And both those guys, what, their three-week windows open? And yeah, obviously it'll be longer for Ardarius, you would think, his ramp up. But what's the latest on those two players?
Yeah, we, you know, today – they practiced today. I don't know how extensive it was. It was not a media practice, open to media. It was sort of, you know, since they were off over the weekend and they did the work, usually they come in Monday to review the game and then go from there. And then they're off Tuesday, practice Wednesday. But since the schedule Thursday, they did all the reviewing on Friday. So then they got the weekend off and they were back on the practice field today. Tomorrow's the first practice open to media, but they activated both Tavius Robinson and Ardarius Washington. I've gotten a lot of questions about Ardarius Washington. First of all, unbelievable work ethic from that kid, who is just overachieved, undrafted free agent, who has made himself into a player. But I think they have to win next couple weeks for Ardarius Washington to, like, it just, if they're not, like, if why would he come back for two or three games if they're not in position? Like,
he's not signed through next year, right?
No, he's a free agent. So if you're him, you want to put out bad tape for two games for a team that's is probably close to out of it. So I think they need to win to make it matter. I know people are asking, like, look, how are they going to use all these guys? That's way too premature. Let's see how he gets through practice. Let's see how he's moving around. Let's see if they have something to play for. And then even if they do, maybe he's just a depth guy, you know, maybe they don't, you know, maybe he's not a big part of it, but you just, first of all, the first reaction is just, man, like, what effort to get himself back. He could easily shut this down after the 1-5 start, took his foot off the throttle and said, you know, I'm not coming back. And, you know,
like, if I remember, he was pissed about the contract. Remember he had the tweet after?
Yes.
About,
oh yeah, he was. Yes, absolutely. So, you know. And then Tavius, I haven't heard this yet, as I said, like, but originally the Pittsburgh game was the game being circled. So, you know, would it shock me if he's ready to be back and he could give you 10, 12 good snaps and instead of in the spot, you know, from Lawson or a Jabo? No, I'm not saying he's definitely going to play. I mean, I'd imagine you have to get through these practices, see how you feel. But it's a little different in his injury and in what his role is. Like, obviously it took likely a while. They had virtually the same injury, but that's a little different role. So, we'll see. Would I be shocked if he plays? No, but I'm also not predicting that. But, there's a guy that plays with some toughness. There's a guy that plays with some physicality and he'll punch somebody in the mouth.
Good Canadian lad right there.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like, adding him, yeah, he's not going to improve the pass rush, sure, but he does allow for a little more versatility. He does give you a little more options. And I think they like the edge he plays with and the toughness he plays with. And this is the time of year where you like to have those kind of guys on the field.
You have any kind of feel for Wiggins? Harbaugh described him as day-to-day. Clearly in the second half, they missed him Thursday night.
I mean, look, I always say I have not heard anything definitively, but when the Ravens rule someone out during a game pretty quick, that means he's definitively has an injury that's usually a couple weeks. So I'm not expecting to see him this week. I don't think Harbaugh is going to rule anybody out before a game against the Steelers. He's typically even tighter-lipped in these big divisional games. But, yeah, I would think that we won't see him this week. And if we see him in the next couple weeks, it would be considered a real positive. You just don't like to see foot injuries with cornerbacks either. And, man, he was having a good first half too. I mean, he loves that. He loves those matchups. He loves getting targeted. He lives for that. And he was really rising to the occasion.
I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to be a novelist over here. I'm writing a book on John Harbaugh's coachisms, and day to day means week to week.
Yeah.
You know, right. When he says day to day, just don't expect it. We'll see him for the second Steelers.
And week to week means month to month.
I heard day to day and I was like, Wiggins isn't playing. He's not playing.
Right.
Yeah.
How many times do we hear that about Ricard in the opening month of the season?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, getting to Wiggins, how many guys on this team have exceeded your expectations this year, or have at least played up to them? You look on the offensive side of the ball, can you name one?
I expected Daniel Falele to be bad, and he's bad. So, I mean, technically met my expectations.
Yeah. Shit.
I mean, Andrews maybe, I don't know. But for his defensively,
on defense, yeah. Though, defensively, Kyle, Cheeto.
Yeah, I don't think Hamilton's exceeded my expectations.
I don't think he's exceeded, but he's met. Like, they've moved him in.
Cheeto certainly has exceeded my expectations. Jordan Stout has exceeded my expectations. I would say Wiggins.
The short list is Wiggins, yeah, Cheeto, and Stout.
Stout. Those are the ones that stand out. Yeah, I mean, those are the ones that stand out. John Jenkins has probably done exactly. But yeah, so I guess I say that just to say, yeah, this is a big loss for them. I mean, definitely. I know there's a lot of tension, but Derek Harmon, who really looks the part, and as Pittsburgh reporters are pointing out, his drafting was partly a reaction over what the Ravens did to him in those last two games, where they just kind of ran the ball right down their throats, and now you don't have him. But not having Wiggins is not a good development. I mean, maybe it won't loom large against the Steelers. They've had, you know, you put up the stats about their downfield passing game, but you sure as hell would want to have them next the following week when they go into Cincinnati, and they may get T. Higgins this time around in addition to Chase.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll likely be out of protocol by then. And then just to kind of wrap up the whole availability and health status, we briefly mentioned Justice Hill, who's going to be out on that week-to-week calendar timetable, right? And then yet again, as we alluded to, the neck, it's an ominous injury.
I know.
That it's anywhere near Nnamdi Matabike. Yeah. The optics don't tell you that at all, but something the neck-related is obviously hypersensitive. And so Harbaugh's being asked specifically about Rasheen Ali. So I suppose that increased role based on what he's done in pass pro will continue. He outsnapped all running backs probably because of that trait.
Yeah. And I'll say, you know, this has been a year of just weird injuries. Like Justice Hill was on the field, went through the entire walkthrough, no issue, stopped to chit chat with the media a little bit that Monday night, was in a great mood, was super friendly. Then we didn't see him Tuesday, and now we may not see him for the rest of the season. It was like, really? It's a crazy, like, he wasn't even on the injury report Monday, and it was a walkthrough, but that would have indicated something happened in practice. I don't, you know, Harbaugh said it's probably be at least 3 or 4 weeks. So, and he said he's been dealing with it a little bit. It's just a weird situation to go from not even being on the injury report Monday, walking out of the locker room. Justice Hill's a great dude and friendly, saying hello to everyone, looking really upbeat. And then all of a sudden, Tuesday, not there. And then by Thursday, they're putting him on IR and with acknowledgement that, you know, we don't know when he would be back. And it's the same thing, guys, that happened to Matabike. I don't want to compare the injuries, but – Justin Matabike reported to the Ravens. It was after the Browns game, right? Where his last game was Browns week two. I believe so, because he did that reverse block, I think, that people wondered, is that where he hurt his neck on the Roquan fumble return for touchdown, I think it was. And he reported he was fine. And then I forgot whether it was Monday or Tuesday. Like, he didn't report any injuries, but then Monday and Tuesday – he showed up at the facility with some symptoms of something wrong with his neck. And then they did further examination in it. And now there seems to be uncertainty if we're going to ever see him again in playing. So it's just kind of been one of those weird years. I know people kind of equate the severity of injuries to whether a guy finished the game or whether he went down or what, you know, if something happened in practice. This is kind of feels like one of these years where, you know, you just don't know. I mean, even though the 1 week with the Kyle Hamilton was out, they were fully anticipating him playing, and then he aggravated a deal during the practice week in one of those practices where three different guys went down. So it's just been crazy like that. It makes it, you know, that, and as Cole says, the Harbaugh-isms, makes it really hard to get a good gauge on kind of where they are at health-wise.
Just to clarify, because you have been asked about it in non-super chat form multiple times, you don't know anything since the last time you followed up on Nnamdi in that.
Several
weeks ago.
No, and I've asked the team. I've put in calls. I've asked the team if he'd be available for a Zoom call or if they'd do something with them, and I just haven't gotten a definitive answer. And you know, you hear things, guys, but and maybe somebody else does it. But. Look, when we're talking about a serious injury, I can't speak for everyone. It'd be tough to source that anonymous source about a guy in the severe injury in terms of if he truly is pondering the end of his career. So I think you need a name attached to that. You need either Matabike, you need Matabike's agent, or you need somebody from the Ravens, one of the decision makers, Harbaugh, DaCosta, to talk publicly about that. You just don't want to put a voice to the things you're hearing without a name. That I think that's really disrespectful to Matabike and just kind of the situation as a whole. But I'm sure every reporter on the beats made calls on it like I have. And, you know, that's what's scary, that nobody seems to want to talk about it. You'd think if there was positive news there, they'd be yelling from the rooftops. And we just haven't had that sort of cooperation.
Right. And as Cole said earlier, you could really use 92 on Steelers week. Good God. So we'll leave it at that, gentlemen. A week from now, we'll have a lot to recap, obviously, and also be looking at ahead to yet again another matchup with the Bengals. This time that game will be in Cincinnati. But first, it's Ravens Steelers, the first of two within this closing 5-week stretch. We appreciate you guys for hanging out with us tonight. Thanks to Sleeper for the continued support of our program. If you could, on the way out, like the video, subscribe, hit that notification bell. Thanks for all the super chats. For Jeff, Cole, I'm Bobby signing off. The Collective will be back with you a week from tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern. You guys know the drill. Thanks so much for dropping by. Efficiently done.